Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Blast off.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways podcast and filmmaker Vincent Caldoni. This is The Shocking Details.
Hey there. Welcome to another episode, a very special episode of The Shocking Details. I am Vincent, joined as always by...
Joe?
There you go. Okay.
Joe.
See if that fools
him. That's me, Joe.
I'm sorry. I should have warned you. Yeah, we've been lying to you all these years.
A lot better.
Yeah. All right. So let's, anyway, it's a special episode because this is just a little bonus. We promised you guys the last time we were in contact, we were talking about D.B. Cooper. We ran out of time. We didn't have time to talk about some of the more popular suspects out there for D.B. Cooper. So we're back for just a brief little episode to talk about some of those guys. And one woman too. Do you want to lead off here, Vincent? I mean, Joe.
Yes. I, Vincent, will lead off. Can you imagine this is someone's first Shocking Details episode?
That's a good point. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
They'd be right now.
Okay. I totally lied. I'm Joe. Yeah. Okay. So Vincent, I'll let you lead off. Let's pick a suspect.
I got to admit, I don't know the most about. His name was Kenneth Peter Christensen.
Yeah, Kenny Christensen, yeah.
Kenny Christensen. I've definitely heard the name, but I haven't really dug into him as a suspect.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so basically 2003, someone named Lyle Christensen saw a documentary about the Cooper hijacking and became convinced it was his brother.
Late brother, Kenneth. That's one thing that ties most of these suspects together is that people don't come forward and accuse them of being D.B. Cooper until after they've died. But and Kenny is definitely one of them. Yeah.
I've got an Uncle Kenny. I wonder if he's D.B. Cooper.
Probably. Close enough. That's good enough for me.
He was technically alive in 1971.
Oh, there you go.
So, yeah, anyway. So, yeah, they looked into it. Do you want to give us some background on him? Well, he was a paratrooper.
He was in the Army, enlisted in 1944. He did train as a paratrooper, but he never really, I don't think, saw combat, but he did do training jumps. And so he had that, and then he joined Northwest Orient Airlines as a mechanic, and eventually became like a flight attendant and then a purser, which is like kind of like a, I guess, you're still flying around on the plane, but I guess. But according to his brother, Kenny did seem to have some extra money that he couldn't account for. But other than that, I'm not seeing it really because he didn't really look like Cooper. Yeah,
I don't think I've ever seen a picture of Christensen.
I've seen a few pictures of him, but you know, he just didn't look quite. He had kind of chipmunk cheeks and much heavier eyebrows, and so I just he didn't look like him.
But yeah, he's not considered a prime suspect, basically.
Well, you know, another reason is, I think it'd be nuts to hijack a plane from your own airline that you work for, don't you think?
I mean, yes, but people do stupid things like that all the time. People rob their own banks and stuff.
Yeah, but you know, at some point though, Kenny Christensen, even if he'd never met anybody in the crew in that airplane before, mm-hmm. at some point in his professional career after the hijacking, he was bound to cross paths with some of those people.
That's a good point.
You know, right? I mean, so anyway, so Kenny is not a great suspect in my opinion.
Yeah.
Okay, right,
let's
so
talk
much
about
for Kenny.
One I think is interesting, but we're not really sold on any of these people, but I think he's interesting.
Okay.
So, who is it? Doyle Cooper.
Yeah, actually, we got to meet his niece at CooperCon a few weeks ago. Yeah, Marla.
Who is just an insanely nice woman.
That doesn't mean that I'm buying her story about her uncle, but, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so as I understand, well, let's, why don't you give us a little background on L.D. Cooper?
Yeah.
I can tell you kind of why I don't put much stock in this. I suppose it's not totally out the window.
Yeah, no, she was, she recalled when she was a kid that her uncle Lynn and another uncle were planning something. This is kind of hazy as to what exactly they were planning. It involved the use of expensive walkie-talkies, apparently. Mm-hmm. So she saw them with these walkie-talkies. And then apparently...
And so we're clear, Marla is not what anyone would describe as elderly. So she would have been little.
Yeah, she was like 8, I think, when the hijacking occurred.
She was even that old when this happened.
Yeah, so just a kid. Yeah. But right after that, Flight 305 was hijacked. And then Lynn Cooper comes home wearing a bloody shirt. He said he just had a little auto accident. She also said that she recalled that her uncle was obsessed with the Canadian comic book hero Dan Cooper that we talked about last week. You know, I don't know. I mean, he doesn't look great in terms of looks. I mean, his picture doesn't really look that much like Cooper to me.
Yeah.
Most of them never really seem to.
Well, so I got two knocks against this one. And one is that this is all pinned on the recollections of an 8-year-old.
There's that. That's a good one.
Woman in her, what would you have to be in her late 50s, early 60s by now?
She would have to be, late 50s. Yeah.
Yeah. And so beyond that, we don't have a lot. Like, if Marla Cooper showed a photo of her uncle lounging in his bedroom with a Dan Cooper comic book page pinned to the wall, my ears would kind of perk up.
Yeah.
But then you get into her stuff where she starts talking about Operation Gladio, which we don't have to go into, but we kind of mentioned how Gladio is a little bit of it's like MK Ultra. It's sort of a boogeyman thing that a lot of conspiracy theories connect up to, some kind of some sense and some with none at all.
Yeah, no, Gladio is like MK Ultra. It's kind of a Rorschach blot of, of a story. The other thing about it is there were articles around it of Lynn Cooper's that he had handled extensively, like, you know, a strap from his guitar, et cetera, that apparently Marla turned that over to the FBI so they could salvage a little DNA off of it and compare to the DNA that they found on Cooper's tie that he left behind on the plane. And there was no match there. So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. So, yeah, the DNA on the tie was not a match to anything that could connect to L.D. Cooper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If that's really Cooper's DNA on the tie, wouldn't we be able to, even though it would be probably a huge lift, but in some sense that we'd be able to connect that with forensic genealogy, find descendants of his and work backwards from there?
The story that I have heard is that they found 3 distinct sets of DNA on the tie, but apparently not in sufficient quantities that they can actually, you know, send off a sample to Ancestry and 23andMe. Yeah, apparently, this is what I have heard.
Okay.
And you'd have to talk to an actual expert on DNA analysis to really confirm that. So they have enough, and apparently enough DNA that they can eliminate a suspect, but they can't positively go out there and, you know, do some sort of database matching, which would be cool if they could.
They won't.
Maybe that's it. Maybe they've already done it and they found Cooper and they quietly assassinated him and took his money for themselves. I mean, who knows? Yeah.
They found him and he was such a nice guy. They decided just to let bygones be bygones.
It could be
them iced tea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about Barb, because Barb is kind of my favorite.
You like Barb? Okay.
Barb did it. I just wish this was the story. I just like this story.
Yeah. This is a bizarre one. And actually,
like Ron Froman. Yeah. He's a nice guy.
Yeah, Ron Foreman is one of the approach editors of this theory, and he showed up at KuperCon as well.
Nice man.
Yeah, very nice man. And,
all right, so let's talk about who Barb was. Barb was a recreational pilot. She's mm-hmm. long past. She was a librarian. She was born Robert Dayton, who served as a U.S. Merchant Marine and in the Army during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And after being discharged, Dayton worked with explosives in the construction field. Anyway, so yeah, he really wanted to get his airline license, but he could not get it.
Yeah,
that came out, but
not sure why. But still was able to fly little small planes. You know, so you can still go out and have fun. But apparently, Barb started claiming to associates that she was Cooper, and had decided to cross back over and dress as a man to stage the hijacking.
The thing about it is, if you talk to Froman, if you see him in the HBO documentary, or actually, apparently, if you read his book, although I I admit I haven't read it.
Yeah.
It Froman almost outs himself for how this could have happened.
Mm-hmm.
He claims that him and his wife started to suspect that Barb was D.B. Cooper and would hold images of Cooper up next to Barb. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if he actually even told us exactly how this went down, that after joking around about this with Barb, which upset her for a number of years, it became part of her psychology and became something she decided to own.
Mm, yeah, maybe that.
But even if that's not the case, all we have is that apparently at some point Barb said this to Ron and made reference to it in a diary discovered after her death, I believe is the only evidence for Barb having been D.B. Cooper, right?
Yeah, but their recounting of the story as told by Barb to them is that so on the way south, Barb goes down the air stairs somewhere over southwest Washington to look ahead to see where the lights of Portland are exactly. Mm-hmm. And then coming back up the air stairs, this is what apparently caused the pressure bump, which we talked about last week.
The pressure bumps.
Okay, yeah, the oscillations bumps in air pressure inside the cabin of the airplane. And then eventually Barb bails out further south in the Willamette Valley. And then even though she has carried this out with incredible daring do and sang froid and everything, kind of loses her nerve and ditches the money in a cistern on a farm somewhere east of I-5 and never goes back for it, apparently. So, okay. All right. There's a lot of problems I have with this. It's like, you know, for one thing, Barb never mentioned to them how she got off the plane without creating another pressure bump. Never told them that. And they were remarkably curious about that. And even though, as I talked about last week, I believe that it is entirely possible to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Barb never told them that. And that would be something of great interest. I would think that if Barb had actually succeeded in doing that and figuring that out, she would have been so proud of herself, she would have had to have told them how she did it and yet did not tell them anything about it. That's remarkable.
Barb told them and didn't tell them is also, I think, kind of mildly suspect. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is hiding the money in a cistern. This is apparently somewhere near Woodburn and then never goes back for it. And that's another thing I find impossible to believe, because cisterns, you know, on farms or houses or wherever, are always part of a well system. Well, systems always have issues, and you always wind up looking into your cistern sooner or later.
Hmm.
This farmer apparently in 50 years never looked in his cistern and discovered the money in there. So there's many reasons to not take this story very seriously.
I think you guys are going to notice a theme, and this theme will continue, is that you have people who feasibly maybe had the skills to pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
Were alive in 1971.
Mm-hmm.
And said or were suspected by people to have done it. And that's all. That's really all you get.
Yeah. And so
really any of them, you know, like Barb said this at one point to Ron.
Yeah.
Out of that there, we wouldn't even be talking about Barb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. All so right. It's either typically the theme here seems to be it's either people themselves, the suspect themselves want attention.
Mm-hmm.
Or the people who knew them want a little attention or something, or an excuse to write a book or something. I don't know.
Fame game.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about William Gossett.
William Gossett. Yeah. He's considered a more credible suspect, you know. Although I don't believe he was Cooper, but.
Nope. But yeah. he was. So he died in 2003.
Yeah.
He was in the Marine Corps and the Army Air Force. He was a veteran. He saw action in Korea and Vietnam. That's what happened.
Korea and Vietnam.
Both Korea and Vietnam.
Yeah, he was a Korea and Vietnam veteran.
No, I just misspoke.
I like that.
Yeah, he was like an ROTC instructor, and anyway,
and also was a paratrooper, or at least had paratrooper training. He had jump training.
He had advanced jump training. I don't know how much of it he did, but he did have the training. So that looks good, and I like that he was someone who knew how to jump out of planes. Because we're just not to go back to the Barb thing, but there's no evidence Barb ever sky jumped even once in her life, is there?
I don't know. Not that I know of. No. But yeah, the other thing about Gossett, apparently never went public himself, but apparently late in life, sometime not too long before he died, he told three of his sons and a few other people as well that he was D.B. Cooper.
But he also had like an unhealthy obsession with D.B. Cooper.
Apparently did. Apparently he
tons of like worse, stuff on him.
Worse than you and me, even, you know?
Yeah. Definitely worse than me.
And that's like, yeah. You, man, but, and I don't know. We're pretty sick in the head. So, man, he must be really out there, right?
We've had at least one person email us to say that they've fallen into the Cooper vortex from listening to our podcast. So we've done this to someone else.
Yeah.
So,
that's the first thing I remember, when the first time I ever talked to Bruce Smith, this was years ago, about Cooper. And he just said, you know, so are you just sort of looking into this a little bit? Or have you been doing this a long time? And I just said, oh, you know, I just sort of got into it because of this podcast that I was doing, my old podcast, and I'm really kind of getting into it. And he sort of chuckled and says, welcome to the world of Cooper, my friend.
No, seriously.
It's true, man. But I don't know. But Gossett
had a pretty crazy life, too. He changed his name to Wolfgang, became a priest.
Wolfgang, yes. He was a priest.
He's a fascinating man. But I don't think there's any direct evidence to even really put him in the same part of the country, right?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Supposedly, he claimed that the money, the ransom money, was actually kept in a safe deposit box in Vancouver, BC. Ooh. That's what he said. And apparently he showed his son the key to the safe deposit box at one point. But, you know, so what? What is that?
It's a key.
I know. So what, right? But at the same time, I mean, it's been said also about Gossett. I think one of his sons said that he was actually... Gossett was a gambler. And so if he did actually have that $200,000, he probably took it to tribal casinos or Vegas or, you know, Atlantic City or wherever, and probably just flushed it all.
OTB maybe. It's hard to imagine a compulsive gambler could keep that kind of money around. And if it was in circulation, I think some of it at least would have had to have made it back to the Fed.
It would have turned up, and it has not.
Let's move on from him. I want to talk about John List.
John List. Now, he's a cool suspect, but not a good one, but he's a cool one. You'll find out why here in a sec.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
John List has been the subject of many a true crime podcast, like so many that we wouldn't cover it. I think Gen Y has a good one on them. He was an accountant. He was a World War II and Korean War vet. And then one day he murdered his wife, 3 children, an 85-year-old mother in New Jersey.
Nice guy.
That was actually just 15 days before the Cooper hijacking.
And
he had withdrawn $200,000 from his mother's bank account and disappeared. I don't know. I don't totally see how that.
He wanted matching funds. It totally makes sense.
That's what it was going to be. Yeah. He's like $400,000 or bust. I mean, he was going to pay her back. I don't know. So, but actually he had, and this is actually really fun. He was on the lam for a long time, and a sculpture of him made by, I think, the FBI that was featured on Unsolved Mysteries ended up with him getting busted in 89. And it's one of those things where the composite they made actually really looked like him.
That's not always the case, is it?
Not always.
Yeah, but he always denied being Cooper. He totally fessed up to murdering his entire family, but he denied being Cooper.
I guess he was technically on the run from the law at the time. Other than that, I can't see a reason why he'd be Cooper. What else? Like, I don't know. Like, what,
I don't see
Charles Manson Cooper. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he doesn't. He really, really did not look like the composite drawing of Cooper.
Not even a little bit. And no. I don't think there's anything to say that he would have the paratrooper skills to do this, or
that he never committed
any other crime that involved, you know, ransoming and hijacking. It doesn't.
And certainly, as far as, you know, denying to the authorities that he was Cooper, I don't see any reason to do it. I mean, he's already on the hook for 5 freaking murders. If you're really Cooper, why not just fess up? You know?
Yeah.
List is, like I said, he's great because he's a juicy suspect because he's a mass murderer. But other than that, he kind of sucks as a suspect.
So let's move on to someone a lot more interesting.
Yeah, Richard McCoy. Now, this guy was probably, quite possibly, the first, I think he was the first Cooper suspect.
I think so. I think he was the lead suspect for quite a while.
Yeah, he was. And actually, there was at least one FBI agent who was convinced, actually, this is the guy who actually shot Cooper McCoy to death. he was convinced that he was Cooper. But yeah, so this guy, he hijacked a 727 mere months after Cooper did. And that was in April 72. And he demanded $500,000. He used, a hand grenade and a handgun to hijack it. And I think he brought his own parachute as well. But he bailed off the plane. But unfortunately for him, one of his coworkers recalled a conversation that he had had with McCoy that right after the Cooper hijacking, when it was all in the news and everything, that Cooper had hijacked this plane and gotten away scot-free and gotten $200,000. And McCoy tells his coworkers, "Oh, what an idiot. If it had been me, I would have demanded $500,000. And then, and then when he does it, you know, and this coworker remembered, you know, this $500,000 remarks. So he suggested to the police they might want to look into McCoy. And sure enough, when they came busting into his house, they found the $500,000 there with a few bills missing for, you know, expenses. Yeah. But one of the reasons I don't like him as a suspect, though, is that they found his stash of money from that hijacking, but not a single bill from the $200,000 of Cooper's. Of course, some people get around that by saying, "Oh, well, he lost it. You know, he lost the bag, and that's why he had to do the hijacking again." Okay, yeah, okay. Maybe. I don't know. I just don't think so. I mean, I really don't think so.
I don't want to go into the whole thing about the McCoy skyjacking attempt, but it was clearly one, a copycat and a pale imitation. I mean, yeah, he was able to bail out and survive, but like it was not handled all of that well. Cooper seemed way more organized. So I don't know. Maybe. I really liked McCoy for a while and I kind of was into it, but the more I've looked into it, the more I think McCoy was just a Cooper wannabe.
Yeah, I think so too.
Cooper cosplay.
Oh, you'd be surprised though. I've met some pretty hardcore Cooper or McCoy aficionados out there.
Yeah, but isn't there pretty good evidence he was not even in Portland at the time?
Yeah, there is. I think he was. There was evidence that actually this car was spotted, I think, in Las Vegas at the time.
Yeah. Okay.
Although you could make an argument that, well, he parks his car in Vegas and hops a flight to Portland, and then so maybe okay. But here's the other problem with McCoy is that Flo Schaffner and Tina Mucklow, you remember them, our stewardesses, both saw him up close and personal. They said McCoy was not the guy. So, of course, that doesn't, you could always argue, I suppose, it was a big conspiracy and they lied. Ooh.
Yes, whatever. Yeah. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Robert Rackstraw.
Oh, yeah, Robert Rackstraw. Tell us all about Bob Rackstraw here. He got some fame from that, was it the History Channel documentary?
Yeah, definitely. I watched it when I watched that, I was like, wow, this guy looks really good for it. Now I'm not so sure.
Mm-hmm.
So he came to the attention of the Cooper Task Force in February of 1978. He was arrested in Iran. They deported him back, whatever. He was doing all kinds of shady stuff, check kiting, hanging paper.
Yeah.
He was kind of a shady sort of would-be criminal. He did have military parachute training. He was a criminal. He had a criminal record, so I guess so. But they actually eliminated him in 1979 because there was no direct evidence that could be found.
Mm-hmm.
In 1979, not 89.
Yeah.
All right. We'll leave it. I make mistakes.
Yeah. Oh, no. It's okay.
But this guy comes roaring back to life with his History Channel documentary. Yeah. He's kind of come back to the forefront, at least recently. Anyway, so what do you think about this guy?
The big problem I have with Rackstraw is he was only 28 at the time of the hijacking.
Mm.
So that to me is just, right there. That kind of kills him as a suspect, I think, because Cooper was mid to late 40s, right?
That's what they said.
Of course, I maybe Rackstraw looked a lot older than he was at age 28. I don't know, but
he did something to make himself look. I don't know, but
yeah,
I wouldn't dismiss it all about that. But I kind of am with the FBI in that until something can put Rackstraw in, PDX on that afternoon, I don't really have any reason to suspect it's him. There's a lot of people out there. If you just go by demographics, who would have some amount of paratrooper training, especially in 1971, a lot of people served in the military over the last three wars where there was parachuting going on. And you got a white guy who vaguely matches the description. That could be anybody. And one's about as good as the other. If that's all you require.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. So we're gonna kick old Bob Rackstraw out of the curb, I think.
I did think he was an interesting suspect for a time.
Yeah.
But really, you know, the standard for me is I need more than this guy could have feasibly done it. That's all we've got for Rackstraw.
Speaking of that,
let's move on to Walter Recca.
Walter Recca, one of the most recent suspects, if not the most recent.
I think so.
Yeah, he was, I remember when this happened, there was all sorts of stuff on the internet about this. These people called a press conference and everything. And he had a friend who had made hours and hours of recordings of conversations with him where he described the hijacking and stuff. And I didn't listen to all of the recordings. I listened to some of them. And right there was one of the things about Recca that really gave it away for me that he was not Cooper, was that he'd hijacked the plane and gotten his cash and his parachutes. And he was like wondering, well, gee, how am I going to bail out? And he said, one of the stewardesses said, well, you could just use those stairs at the back of the plane. And I was like, oh, you mean there's stairs there? Cool. Now, I mean, seriously, dude, I mean.
But how good would it be if that's actually what we find out, even if it's not Recca, we found out that's actually the story of D.B. Cooper. He was not this master criminal who was plotting to deceive them with pressure bumps, but he just was like, well, I could use those stairs over there.
Well, holy crap, there's air stairs? Oh, my God. Yeah, but, but you know, of course, I sincerely doubt that because Cooper did specifically want to know when he bought his ticket if the flight was going to be on a 727.
No, Cooper seems more prepared than that. I just think that would be really funny if he was.
It would be funny, but yeah. Oh, well, there's actually, well, because I mean, how the hell are you going to get off that plane without getting killed? If you try to dive out a side door, you're probably going to get, because remember the 727 has three engines, all of them mounted on the rear of the plane.
Right. Yeah. And so if you look at the layout of a 727, if you opened any of the doors and jumped out, you would just, I mean, your best bet would be to merely be taken apart by the wings, if not
chopped in two. Yeah, that would be better than getting sucked into one of those engines. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, so that's another reason. What other reasons are there? He claims that he bailed out of the plane. I can't remember the specific town, but like to the east of Seattle, not south.
Clea Elum?
Yeah, I think it was Clea Elum. So essentially, he claimed bailed out many, many miles east of Seattle when the plane took off and flew more or less straight south.
Yeah, Clea Elum is a long way east of the flight path of Victor 23.
It's way off course, yeah. I mean, you'd be
laying out a weird eastern flight path theory.
Yeah, and so I just want to say the whole Walter Recca thing, what struck me when it came out of that, and at first I was like, oh, wow, and then I started hearing more of the story of this thing. And I started asking myself, oh my God, did this guy, when he wrote his book and came out with all these charges, did he even bother to do any serious research into the Cooper thing before he made this crap up? It sounds like he didn't, you know,
Well, either that or he did, and he just assumed that someone reading the book didn't.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
In terms of D.B. Cooper, that's unforced errors, what you'd call that.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of Cooperites reading your book and sending you emails.
They're going to come for you, knives out, if you get the
seat
he sat in wrong or whatever. Like.
Oh, yeah. And so, yeah, there's... so anyway, Recca, to me, was kind of a fun suspect just because he was such a bad suspect, you know?
Yeah. if I recall, when I heard about Recca, I had the same reaction I had with Rackstraw, but 10 times as fast.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right? Like, I was like, ooh, that's interesting. And then I was like, wait,
this sucks. This is lame.
All right. So we're going to run through a list really quick of people that we're not going to discuss at length because this is already running long.
We wanted to make this short. We're already at half an hour.
But if these are your favorite subjects, sorry, we didn't actually even think they were good enough to talk about.
No.
Please don't flame us.
Oh, hang on.
So Jack Kofelt is the first one. All right. So Jack Kofelt. We didn't really talk about Jack Kofelt mainly because he was a con man.
Mm-hmm.
And he also said he landed on Mount Hood or some crap, which is like nowhere near the flight path.
Yeah, he was not a trustworthy guy.
You're going to believe a liar who is not even backing up, not even telling a credible story. No, you wouldn't believe a liar telling a story that is also incredible.
Yeah.
The other one was Robert Lepsey.
His daughter submitted a DNA sample to the FBI to match with the DNA in the tie, and it did not match. And again, a lot of people have stressed that the DNA from the tie, it might be that even though they found three sets of DNA, none of those were Cooper's. I find that impossible to believe. I mean, you know, seriously, but one of those must have been Cooper's.
I don't know. He just doesn't. There's just, I'm reading over your notes on Lepsy, and basically he kind of disappeared in October 69, but they thought that maybe he, because his keys were found in an airport. That's about all there is to it. The guy was on the run at the time, possibly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, no.
Yeah.
So Ted Mayfield.
But yeah, he was, he's considered one of the stronger suspects, but the FBI ruled him out early.
So you notice the theme here. Part of why we are not talking about a lot of these guys like Ted Mayfield is Ted Mayfield was suspected by the FBI. There's really no evidence about him other than that he knew how to jump out of airplanes and he was maybe just the tiniest bit shady. That's about all I got.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like Cooper. That's, it doesn't look like the drawing.
Yeah, it doesn't look that much like Cooper. Supposedly, he called Ralph Himmelsbach, who was the FBI agent in charge in Portland, which was initially the division of the FBI that was handling this case. And he called Himmelsbach right about or right after 305 landed in Reno to just volunteer some advice on skydiving and stuff and landing zones and stuff like that.
What?
So that, which gives him a bit of an alibi, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know. Again, this is one of those guys that because of his peripheral involvement in the case and because he has skydiving skills, he was advanced as a suspect. But he never really actually, other than that, there's nothing strong about him as a suspect, really.
No.
So there you go. The FBI doesn't think he was. So
no, of course. And I don't see any evidence to suggest the FBI is wrong about that.
Yeah.
So okay, we're going to talk about Sheridan Peterson.
Yeah.
You know, decent suspect, but he didn't really look like Cooper. Probably had an alibi. He was
employed at Boeing. Yeah,
yeah, he worked for Boeing,
a little while.
So he would probably know something about the stair system and whatnot. He was a smoke jumper. You know, he had been in the war and stuff, so he did that stuff. But
I don't know.
I never, you know, the thing I have with Peterson and why I didn't want to talk about him on the podcast, and yet here we are, is that he's just another one of these guys who maybe could have done it.
Yeah, had the skills. That's about it. I know.
Would he have? I don't find any evidence. No. Did he have the opportunity to do it? No. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, what I'm saying. Like, put the guy in Portland in 1971. Put him right there at the airport. And then I'm going to listen to you. But if you can't do that, you need to give me something much better. The level goes way up.
And I'm also, you know, I got to say, with all these guys who died, I'm a little shocked that, like, say, if I was D.B. Cooper and I was writing my will, I would have a sealed envelope with a few of my $20 bills in it, which, you know, as part of, you know, and then just include that with my will. And by the way, this contents of this envelope are for the FBI. Yes. Ha ha. I was Cooper. Wouldn't you fess up in your will or leave a letter with your attorney or something like that?
Exactly.
The
other one is William Smith.
William Smith, he's a recent one.
He's a very recent one. He died just back in 2018.
And then immediately afterwards becomes a suspect.
Well, like, he's dead.
Typically. Yeah.
We keep hearing this. So, yeah, whatever. He was an Army data analyst. He was a New Jersey native and a World War II veteran, blah, blah, blah. He worked for a railroad that went bankrupt, so they think he was getting back at the airlines. Isn't that what this is saying?
I guess that was they're trying to concoct a grudge for him, and his grudge was apparently that he felt like the railroads had been put out of business, at least the passenger side of things, by the airlines. So he was bitter. That's one of the weaker grudges that I've seen.
Really look like Cooper. I don't know. I actually think this guy's interesting. I just need to hear more. I heard a lot of people talking about this Max Gunter book, which I kind of want to read. It's apparently because it's a good book.
Yeah.
But I just have not seen anything that anyone has brought up where it goes beyond that same old trope of this guy had meet some of the requirements. I'm not hearing anyone put him in Portland for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know. He would have had some knowledge, again, of planes and parachutes, I guess. I don't know. But other than that, so let's see. I think our last one here is Dwayne Weber. I got that right. Is it Weber or Weber?
I don't know. I know nothing about this guy. All I know is that he's one of the guys who gave a deathbed confession.
Yeah, what's his,
Which is kind of neat. It's just, you know, a cinematic story, but... So apparently this guy, so apparently his wife knew he had dreams about aft stairs and leaving fingerprints. But it's the same thing. It's the same thing. It's like all the rest of them. It's like this guy, so I guess.
He's talking in his sleep and saying, oh, I got to use the aft stair. You see, is that what it is? How
I think that's what I was doing after my second night at CooperCon.
Yeah, really, I know. But this is interesting. But again, this is all from his wife. You know, I don't want to call her a liar, but all I'm saying is that we're hanging everything kind of on her
right,
word.
Exactly.
But so she says she went after his deathbed confession that he was Dan Cooper. She eventually went to the local library to do some research on Cooper, which she really basically knew next to nothing about. And she found Max Gunther's book in the library. And when she opened it and read it, she discovered that there were notes in the margins of the book. And those notes were in her husband's handwriting.
Oh, my gosh.
That's kind of interesting. But again, that doesn't prove anything because all that's necessary, this might prove that he was kind of obsessed with the case and nothing more than that. Right?
All it proves. That's what I'm saying. Like, we got to get the guy to the airport.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This is why. So anyway, that was really depressing.
He also apparently, Dwayne Weaver also drank bourbon and smoked heavily, just like Cooper.
Okay.
So there you go.
Well, anyway, not our suspect. So let's wrap this one up, Joe.
Yeah, that's about it for the suspects. So if you got any favorite suspects yourself, or if you are a suspect, you want to talk to us. And as always, of course, if you are Cooper, we really want to talk to you. So send us an email. And that's about it, I guess. So stay tuned for important information about our email address and finding us on social media. And of course, the usual plea to leave us a 5-star rating and a glowing review. We're on whatever platform. Yeah, whatever platform you get us from, please do it. Please do that. Yeah. Please. Oh, please. Yeah. Other than that, hope you enjoyed this list of suspects from us.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. You got any more suspects? Anything else?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
All right.
Coopered out.
All right. Let's stick a fork in it then. Yeah. All right. All right, folks. Till next time. Bye.
The shocking details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.